This program was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Kidnappers, a volunteer-based community access station. For more information, go to www.radiokidnappers.org.nz. Thanks to New Zealand On Air for making this program available through funding the Access Internet Radio Project.
There's antimony, arsenic, aluminum, selenium, and hydrogen, and oxygen, and nitrogen, and rhenium, and nickel, neodymium, neptunium, germanium, and iron, americium, ruthenium, uranium, europium, zirconium, lutetium, vanadium, and lanthanum, and osmium, and astatine, and radium, and gold, protactinium, and indium, and gallium, and iodine.
You're listening to Radio Kidnappers, the voice of Hawke's Bay, and I'm Lynn Trafford, presenting on behalf of the Hawke's Bay branch of the Royal Society of New Zealand, Hawke's Bay Scientists on Air. This program is your opportunity to get to know recently retired and practicing scientists from around the bay. With me in the studio, I have Dr. Thomas Wilding, Senior Scientist Hydrology in the Environmental Science Team at the Hawke's Bay Regional Council. Not from Hawke's Bay originally, today we will find out how Dr. Wilding from Auckland's North Shore via the University of Auckland and Colorado State University ended up here in the Bay. Welcome to Radio Kidnappers and Hawke's Bay Scientists on Air, Dr. Thomas Wilding.
Thank you.
Thomas, where did you go to primary school, intermediate school, secondary school? Where are you from? You're on the shore somewhere.
Yes, Beechhaven.
Beechhaven.
Beechhaven Primary, started school there.
Yes, and intermediate school?
There wasn't an intermediate because we went to Australia for 9 years.
Oh, okay.
And they didn't have an intermediate.
They don't. No, yeah. Okay. So, what about secondary school?
Rangitoto College.
And did you live over that way at that time, Rangitoto?
Glenfield at that time.
Ah, okay. So they sent you to Rangitoto. Yeah. Whilst you were at school over there, Thomas, was there a time when you sort of thought, science, this is going to be a career for me. I love this. I love that. I love the other thing. I've got to go that way. What turned you on?
Yeah, I think so. It probably was reasonably clear at high school, although I may not have known it at the time.
Okay.
I mean, I had a fascination in, wild things, wild places, always climbing in and out of creeks or going hunting for lizards or things like that when we were kids. Science was a more interesting topic for me at school than English or things like that.
So you weren't one of these students that went off to university thinking, I have no idea why I'm here, but it's going to be a great time.
Well, I had different people tell me different things. You know, why would you do science? You need to do something more practical, like become a vet food science, was one they were directing me to,
yeah.
And which were all great ideas, great suggestions. But
not to a creek-loving bug person.
That's right.
No, I can understand that. All right. So somewhere along the line, this creek-loving bug-type person decided off to the University of Auckland to study science.
Okay. Yes.
What did you study there
in
the end?
In the end, I studied little streams of Auckland. So that was the urban streams.
Uh-huh. So what were you looking for in your study?
Looking for, you have all the water that runs off roads and off roofs and things like that. What impact was it having on the fish and bugs living in those streams in Auckland, those little streams?
Yeah, and there's lots of them, aren't they?
There's little streams.
There's heaps of them on the shore.
Yes, yes. Yeah, lots of little streams with cockapoo and all sorts of things.
Yeah.
But often overlooked in favour of the, the stony rivers and the mountains and the bigger estuaries in Auckland.
Well, they're often just pesky things at the bottom of the garden that sometimes flood.
That's right.
Needed
piping.
Yeah, that's right. Just need bigger pipes or something or other. All right, so you stayed there. Did you do your bachelor's and your master's at Auckland?
That's right.
You did? So what was your master's in?
The master's was on the urban streams in the end.
Okay.
Yep.
Good.
I didn't start on the urban streams, but that's where I ended up.
That's where you ended up. After university, you spent a period of time, about 7 years, working with various regional councils. Can we sum up life? You went down, first of all, to Waikato Regional Council based in Hamilton.
That's right.
Uh-huh. So what were we doing there?
So that was first job, isn't it? Technician, I suppose. So that's, you know, collecting the samples.
Water samples, are we talking?
Yeah, it was invertebrate samples, uh-huh. So bugs living in the creeks. It was algae, you know, in the lakes.
Yes.
Water chemistry as well, even bathing beaches, you know, all sorts of running around and collecting samples.
Waikato region is quite a large area to cover, isn't it? And then you went to across to Whakatane as part, yes, of the Bay of Plenty. So really, yes, your experience stretched right across the North Island taking in those two.
Yeah, that's right. I got to see a lot of the volcanic plateau, I would call it. You know, those, the Waikato River is really, you know, it's fed by Lake Taupo, and understanding those streams that drain pumicey catchments, they're quite different.
They are, aren't they?
Yeah.
From our rivers down here particularly, yeah, which we will get, yeah, to in, yeah, a few moments' time,
yes,
possibly. Good experience for a young scientist, though.
Excellent experience, yeah.
Good. And you enjoyed your time with both of those councils?
I did, yeah.
Right. After 7 years starting life with the regional councils, you joined NIWA.
That's right. So, yeah, working one of my jobs at Bay of Plenty Regional Council was they had the problem with what to do about people taking water out of the streams. They weren't seeing any
taking
big problems.
Taking water for what? Why are we taking
mostly
water?
Mostly for irrigation.
Irrigation, okay.
Yep, most of it's used for irrigation. What to do about it? When do we say no? When do we say yes?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you can take more, or no, you need to cut back. So, so I focused increasingly on that question, understanding how fish use the speed of the water and the depth of the water to their advantage, how they become dependent on that, and come up with some methods for, you know, where to draw the line, and that work carried on at NIWA. As well as my work on lakes. I'd worked a lot on the Rotorua Lakes for Bay of Plenty, so that carried on at NIWA.
With NIWA, what sort of geographic area are we talking about? Okay, you were based in Hamilton, but where did the spread go to?
Coromandel,
oh, it's quite big then.
Wellsford, Canterbury.
Oh,
okay. Yeah. So yeah, but mostly in the North Island still.
Yeah, so you saw lots of lakes and streams.
Yes.
One was of particular interest to you, was it not?
Yes, yes. We, me and a friend of mine, we started work on in our spare time on the Manga Kotukutuku stream.
Now, where is this stream?
This is in Hamilton, flows through Glenview.
Glenview,
on the,
yeah,
western side of Hamilton.
It
there.
Does.
Yes.
Okay. So what happened with the stream?
It was a little urban stream, you know, that was pretty neglected. The gullies were seen as waste areas, you know, somewhere to dump your lawn clippings, tip your fill in, try and make some useful flat ground.
But so, was that any different from just about any other stream? Really,
no.
People did do this. Hopefully we're a little, yeah, bit more educated these days,
yeah,
but that's what people did.
Yeah, yeah. No, I don't think it was anything unusual there.
Yeah.
But so we put our effort into trying remove a lot of the weeds.
Yep.
These gullies were full of weeds.
Yep.
Years of garden waste, every conceivable weed. Get the native plants going.
Mm-hmm.
Get some good shade into these streams. At least help the that side of the habitat.
Yeah, and bring back the life in the streams,
yes,
maybe.
Yes.
Was it successful, Thomas?
I think so. Yeah, we started seeing giant cockapoo appearing in those
good
streams.
Yes, good.
Which is a rare fish. I don't know if we can take credit for that or not, but I wasn't seeing them before.
But you
so
would have helped with the habitat, yes, for them to make them all feel at home.
And this is also the time when the Waikato region was doing a lot of pest control, and that's when the tuis and wood pigeons started coming back, so we were providing them more food.
I think around New Zealand and that, we're talking early 2000s at this stage, aren't we? Early to mid,
yes,
2000s. And I think regional councils, in your case NIWA, were doing this kind of project around New Zealand, trying to educate people to take better care of streams and outlets to and from lakes.
Absolutely.
And it was successful, wasn't it?
Yes. And I think, you know, we've got examples in Havelock North, the Karatawhenua stream, which was one of the first streams where, you know, people started to take an interest in the stream in their own backyard and trying to make it better.
You and your associate were rewarded for your work on that stream, were you not? Don't be modest here, Thomas. I know that this happens. So tell our listeners, please, what happened?
Oh, we got it was called a Ko-Fi Award from the Hamilton Environment Centre gave us that award.
That's nice, isn't
which
it?
Which was nice, yeah.
It was good. It's really lovely to get a recognition,
yes,
rather than a reward, I suppose, but a recognition of success and an example set so others can maybe follow that.
That's right.
Congratulations and well done on that one. Then a very major step happened in your life, did it not?
Science-wise, yes, I headed off to...
Personal and science.
Well, that's right. Yeah, personal. Well, I met my wife in Hamilton, who was from Colorado. We moved to Colorado, be closer to Pam's family, Pam's dogs. They were still back home. Had to get close to the dogs.
To the dogs. I was going to say, the family I could understand. Okay, the dogs were important.
Yeah,
right?
I think sometimes maybe the family came second.
Okay. So you're off to meet the in-laws.
Yes, that's right.
Across to Colorado. But also you looked upon this period of personal development for your wife and yourself to study. What happened as far as your study was concerned, Thomas?
Right, so back to university, back to school to do my PhD.
And what were you focusing on for your PhD?
This was focusing more on the issue of people taking water out of streams and the effects. Not just people, not just irrigation, but also Colorado. Well, take a step back. Colorado is a lot like New Zealand. Same area. It's the same size as New Zealand. It's the same population as New Zealand. So similar in that respect, but it's semi-arid. You know, they get a foot of rainfall a year where most of the people are. And despite being settled by Europeans about the same time, mid to 1800s, huge water development, tunnels through mountains.
Why are the tunnels through the mountains?
Well, you have a big rain shadow effect. Well, not rain shadow, I should say snow shadow. Snow coming in from the west.
Yes.
Most of the population on the eastern side.
Uh-huh.
And that's where the flatland is.
So they're bringing that through the mountain.
So they take the rivers that are coming off on the wet side, tunneling them through the mountain and back to where the flatland is, back to where the people are.
So what was the effect of all this then?
Big effects on the river systems. I mean, that was good, you know, for me as a scientist to go somewhere to learn about what happens when you take most of the water out of a river.
Yeah, because you're really interfering with nature here, aren't you?
Definitely. Colorado River, you know, used to reach the sea, but I don't think that's happened for a while. It used to, you know, flow all the way down into Mexico. People in Mexico were using that water, but it doesn't reach there very often.
So if you're constantly taking the water out of it,
yep,
that's, in the end, the sort of thing that could happen.
Yeah, as well as the effect. I mean, I was focusing more on the effects in Colorado on the trees that grow along beside the river in a dry environment. The trees are dependent on floods for watering, for new growth. You take away the floods and you take away the trees.
Yeah, that's right.
And also the fish, all sorts of unique fish, suckers and chubs and pike minnows and things like that that you get over there, which also depend on those floods and warm water. So
what did you conclude with your PhD studies? What was the conclusion to it?
Conclusion was the need to look at the bigger picture. So often in the past, we've got one group of scientists looking very small detail, exactly where the trout sits in the river and how many bugs come past that trout and what flow you need to get it just right for that trout. This was looking, well, what about the floods? You know, you might have got it right for that trout at that point in time where he's catching a bug, but if you take away the floods, you need to look at the bigger picture. You need to look over bigger areas, you know, from satellite photos to before you can see the changes that happen over decades when you take those floods away.
Were you able to apply anything that you had learnt in New Zealand at the regional councils and at the University of Auckland to your study in Colorado, or was it all just a standalone uniqueness?
No, it was really was going from learning from, you know, some really great scientists at NIWA, and then going and working with some great scientists in Colorado, who, you know, people that had developed these methods, people in Colorado that had worked a lot on floods, people in New Zealand that had worked a lot on those low flows, and really trying to find a common ground in those two lines of research, which was, and that common ground was the need to look at the bigger picture, to look at bigger scales, longer time frames, to understand that the two are complementary.
And what did they think of a young man from New Zealand coming over to Colorado to do this kind of study with them, for them? Was it a neat thing to do?
It was. Yeah, I mean, there's a bit of a language barrier, which is...
Well, yes, we all speak English, sort of, maybe, on a good day.
Yes, it's frustrating when you understand them perfectly, but they have no idea what you're saying.
Oops. Well, they would have at least understood your writings and your graphs and your pictures and everything else, so all that would have worked well. Yep. You stayed over there in Colorado, meeting the family and looking after the dogs for 5 or 6 years.
Yes.
Was it time then to come back to New Zealand? What happened to make you decide, yep, here we go, more science in New Zealand, let's skive off and do it?
Economic situation, I think, really. Not a time, global financial crisis. It's a time when you can be a student, but not a time to be finding, you know, a lot of my work is government regulators, and governments were cutting back. Governments were struggling to pay the bills, so not a time to be finding government work in America.
Okay, so you and your wife decided to come back to New Zealand.
Yes.
Now, you've ended up in the Bay.
Yes.
Was that by choice or by accident or by career move or all of the above?
Oh, yeah, all of the above. Very nice place to live. Job came up. Sold.
It's good, isn't it, when it all works out like that. That's right. Can give it a tick. So you've come to the Hawke's Bay Regional Council.
Yes.
In about 2012.
Yes.
Around about 2012 as a hydrologist.
Yes.
Excellent. Can we just talk now about what you've found with your work here in the Bay since you came here? Before we do, Thomas, can you define for our listeners the Hawke's Bay Regional Council region? What are we going to be looking at in this discussion?
Okay, so Hawke's Bay region, the ranges. So when you look west to the mountains, the top of the mountains is the edge of the region on that side, and along the coast extends all the way up to Mahia, and down south to Porongaho.
Uh-huh. Now, in that area, there's quite a few lakes and streams for you to get stuck into, isn't there?
Yes. Yep. And I'm not working much in the lakes here, but in terms of the streams and stream flows, focusing more on that, especially on the Heratonga Plains, the plains around Hastings and Napier, and the effects of water use on those streams.
And the groundwater, we're looking at that as well.
So groundwater, that's been the big shift for me.
This is a bit of a newbie, is it?
It is, yeah. Uh-huh. You know, always looking at the importance of stream flow, but here a lot of the water use is groundwater use.
Yes.
So understanding the effects of water use, you've got to connect the dots. Any effects will be felt through the groundwater.
Our groundwater is a very precious natural resource for us here in the Bay, is it not?
It's a fabulous system, the way it works with the, you know, the you've got the mountainous Ngarawarra River that comes down off forested areas, quite clean water, comes down and it hits those gravels up near Fern Hill and recharges the aquifer with that nice clean water, constantly going in there at 5,000 litres a second, and that's the water that sustains Napier, Hastings.
It's a lot of water, isn't it, when you put it like that? I hadn't really thought about the flow per second, if you like. That's quite good.
Yeah. So it's a good way in terms of, you know, it's quite dry here.
Mm-hmm.
Not Colorado dry, but it's still dry.
It still gets dry for us.
So, yeah, agriculture, you know, people still depend on that water.
They do. So we're talking Ruatanifa, Heretonga Plain usage.
Yes.
For that. What do we use that aquifer water for? What are its main uses,
yep.
Thomas?
Well, as well, I mean, people will know, you know, when they're turning on their tap, that's probably the water they're using.
The municipal supply.
Yes, yeah, yes. Yep, watering the garden. But there's also all of the apples, all of the tomato crops. Yeah, and then the processing industry,
yep.
Various other industrial uses. So, everything except the sheep and beef on the hills, really.
Okay. And our surface water, if we look at the surface water, what is happening at the moment? You monitor it. When you are monitoring surface water, what are you monitoring for? What is this process?
What I'm focusing on for these little spring-fed streams on the plains, I'm focusing on how much oxygen is in the water. Fish need oxygen just like we need oxygen. And it can be a real problem when the flows get low in these little spring-fed streams.
So when the flow is low and when the flow is unnaturally high, are these the two problem areas?
The high flows, yeah, well, the high flows are here we don't have the big storage projects on the Heretonga Plains or the Ngātahuatanga River, so a lot of those high flows are still reasonably natural. Uh-huh. So those natural processes are still happening, but of course we do have the flooding problems that creates for people especially. But in terms of the low flows, the river's getting lower and lower as the summer goes on.
And so how does that affect what is in the river or in the stream? River getting lower and lower, what happens?
Oxygen moves through air quite quickly, but in water the oxygen moves through the water 10,000 times slower than it does through the air. So to get the oxygen in the water really depends on the turbulence, on the mixing of that water. As the stream flow reduces, that mixing slows, and then you don't get enough oxygen coming in, and then you have lots of too many plants and organic matter consuming the oxygen.
You talked about turbulence. What about turbulence caused by soil and other nasties maybe coming into the river? That kind of turbulence would have a different effect?
Oh, that's turbidity.
Turbidity?
Turbidity is lots of sediment contaminating the water,
mm-hmm.
whereas turbulence is the...
the flow.
Is the mixing of the water.
Okay.
Think of a rapid that's very turbulent.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So the effect of the excess of soil in the rivers, we watch that too?
Well, that's something that, needs a whole study in itself. And there are other scientists working on that problem with stream bank erosion and gully erosion and what we need to do about
it. Maybe that. I should talk to one of those sometime.
Definitely.
Yeah, and find out what they're studying.
Because
None of this would happen in isolation, would it? Your studies on surface water, on groundwater, their studies on the banks and the effect of that side of things. It does all link in together, does it not?
That's right, yes, definitely. The people that are studying what trees grow alongside the stream, how much shading we're getting to reduce the plant growth. The people studying the nutrients which fuel the plant growth, the people studying the erosion which can smother the system and reduce sediment quality.
So how do you, from all this that's going on at the Regional Council at the moment, how do you think the future sits for us as regards our water in the bay?
I think we're in a much better situation than a lot of places. We're not yet at the point of battles over water. And that shouldn't be taken for granted, whereas a lot of places are. And just look at Syria.
Well, no, let's not at the moment. Let's concentrate on our water here in the bay. Thomas, you're a member of the Royal Society, the New Zealand Freshwater Sciences Society, and from America, your American Fisheries Society and the North American Benthological.
Yeah, they study more of the stream invertebrates and things living on the bottom of the stream.
Right, the creatures. We've not really touched on creatures today. Maybe on another day we should talk about creatures and what we actually find in the streams here. Thomas, on behalf of the Hawke's Bay branch of the Royal Society of New Zealand and of Radio Kidnappers, thank you, Dr. Thomas Wilding, for being my guest on Hawke's Bay Scientists on Air. To find out more about environmental sciences, hydrology, the science being carried out at the Hawke's Bay Regional Council or other regional councils, because we're all kind of doing similar sorts of things across New Zealand, or the role of the Royal Society, a Google search will in the first instance be of help and keep you busy for all afternoon. Please join me again on Monday mornings at 9:30 to meet another practicing or recently retired Hawke's Bay scientist. I'm Lynn Trafford.
This program was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Kidnappers, a volunteer-based community access station. For more information, go to www.radiokidnappers.org.nz. Thanks to New Zealand On Air for making this program available through funding the Access Internet Radio Project.